Are you turned on?
Is that on?
Oh, yeah.
What's your average?
It's not good. It's better than when I was at Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Bradshaw.
Okay, I'm going to, 6:30, I'm going to call the Public Works meeting to order. And start with roll call, I guess. I guess I'll have to call them off. Zach Stock?
Here.
Aaron Carroll?
Here.
Brian Thomas, he's excused. Laura Belsky is excused. Tim Stocker?
Here.
John O'Day?
Here.
And Mark Norrie. Okay, Youth and Governance, Shulan Shaw?
Yeah, here.
Did I pronounce that?
Actually, yes.
Oh, that's good. What a shot, okay. And then Andrew Setter is not present from Youth and Governance. Okay. Approval of minutes from the previous meeting. We can approve them even though we weren't here, if you read them. And unless anyone from staff had seen them and thought anything was wrong with them. Someone to move the minutes from the last meeting?
Motion to approve.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, minutes been moved and seconded, any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed, nay? Okay, it's passed. Chairman notes or statements or whatever. Yeah, you have to keep that somewhat open, yeah. We're substituting out Supervisor Stocker for Supervisor Gens. That was something that Chairman Noodle had decided to do based on Supervisor Gens, never been able to make a meeting, so that has been done. Also due to conflicts with some of the supervisors for the first Monday meeting, after this meeting, all meetings will be on the fourth Monday, so the next meeting, and our some who can't be here, they've already told me that, will be May 23rd, and then the fourth one following that. I talked to Ray about that, since staff is okay with that, so we're moving ahead with that as well. One of the things I guess I wanted to bring up was my expectations. My expectations for Public Works Committee can be whittled down to one word, involvement. That's for everybody. I expect all committee members, staff, and Youth and Governance to get involved with the process and how we get involved is by asking questions. So don't think any question is a dumb question, especially if you haven't been here before. My first time on Public Works, I learned that the staff is eager to answer questions. They're eager to help. And they want to inform us as well. So I ask questions on things I didn't understand or know, and I questions answers that didn't sound right to me either. And I think Ray can comment and I will pretty much confirm that. So my suggestion is to make it a quest to be the dumbest one in the room. Dumbest one in the room should be asking questions. So don't consider that a bad thing, consider it a good thing. That's how we learn and that's how we get involved. Okay? I want everyone here, and we're going to do it again the 23rd, to introduce themselves. Ray, you want to start?
Sure, I'm Ray Arbit, the Public Works Director.
Vance Torino, Facilities Manager for Kenosha County.
Chris Walton, one of the Finance Managers for Public Works.
Clement Bongwa, Director of Highways.
I'm Shulan Shaw, I'm a Youth and Governance Representative. It's actually my last meeting of my tenure, yeah. So you'll get two new people.
Well, I heard you represented well.
Thank you.
My name is Mark Nordigan, Supervisor District 21.
And John O'Day, District 9.
Aaron Carroll, District 23.
I'm Zach Stock, District 11.
Tim Stocker, District 14.
I'm sitting in, but I'm Brian Bouchon, District 19. My backyard.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to add the folks that are missing tonight.
Yep.
Wendy Epping is normally here. She staffs this meeting. She's ill. Matt Collins is the Parks Director, normally here. He's in the protocol right now. Not ill, but in the protocol. He'll be back to work tomorrow. Frank Martinelli is the Engineering Project Manager for Facilities. Works closely with Matt. Dan Dreyer is the Golf Director. Jim Kupfer is the CFO. Chris works with for finance, for public works. Is that right?
Something got off.
Yeah. So they'll be here next, at the 23rd.
Also, casual attire is fine. It's just something that really doesn't need to just all fine. I know that we've had meetings at Pringle before. I'd like to continue that, at least whenever that comes up.
Yeah, we actually started something with the last committee that just started to work out, where we would go to other public works facilities. We had our last one was actually at Brightondale in the clubhouse. Okay. A lot of the folks had never been there. So, you know, there might be limitations with some of the facilities,
yeah,
but most of them, if people wanted to see the detention center, I'm sure the sheriff would be, you know, thrilled actually, yeah, to have us there. Probably get a tour. And so there's five basic campuses for the county for facilities. Starting on the south would be the job center, most folks are familiar with. Then there's the civic campus downtown that's got the courthouse, the administration building, public safety building. Then you move over to Brookside, that campus on the north side. Then the detention centers on Highway H in between S and 158. And then there's this campus. So those are the five main campuses. But it would be good to...
Yeah, so we'll discuss that maybe at a future meeting as to where we'd want to meet down the road and put some time together on that. And you brought it up, tour of the public works facilities. So I don't know if we want to do it as a group or one-on-one. I'm sure John's probably going to give it to us. He's been to enough.
You mean this building?
Yeah. Well, public works in general, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I was going to cover that at the end, but we can cover it now. Mm-hmm. Yep. I know that UW Extension, when there's a new election and new supervisors in place, they do a kind of a high-level overview of how county government works. I don't think that's been scheduled yet. At least I haven't heard about it, but you may. Okay, you haven't heard anything, then it hasn't been scheduled yet. It's probably going to come up
under
the next one.
Under PDEC, would it not? But UW Extension. Yeah. It would be under PDEC, wouldn't it?
Well, they'll contact all the supervisors.
Okay.
It'll
yeah.
go through, I think, the chairman of the board, and then it'll go to all the
okay.
supervisors. So they just must not have everything together yet.
Right.
Usually happens in late May or June, if I remember right. So there's going to be that at a high level. And then, in addition, we've offered a tour of behind-the-scenes public works. Supervisor Nardigan did it. Supervisor Wamble. Probably a half dozen have taken advantage of it in the past. It's a good opportunity. It's about a day, but it's a day that's worthwhile. You start, depending on, there's a couple different schedules or itineraries we can set up, but we basically would have it so that you guys would get a behind-the-scenes look at all the operations in public works. And it's really a, everybody that's done it felt it was a very valuable thing if you got the time to do it.
Right, so I guess we could either talk about it now as to how does anybody want to look to set it up, or do we want to, I don't think we necessarily have to come in as a group, because some days will work better for others.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are a few days you want to put together and say, hey, these days work for us, and have them choose,
I'll
see what
I can do there. That. I'll shoot a few days out and a few different schedules, kind of itineraries
okay.
that might work for folks.
That'd be great. So, thank you, Rick. Other than that, I think I am done with anything I had. Any of the other supervisors have any comments?
When you talk about the different meeting locations, where you talk about having our committee meetings at, okay, that's
right.
what I thought, just on pressure.
Anybody else? Your last meeting, if you want to...
I don't really have anything to say. I'm just a little curious. Who's going to be the new mentor for this committee?
I don't know if that's...
I don't think we have those out yet. I think we have to wait for the... for the youth and governance and the mentors kind of merge
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Because right.
I think that'll come, chairman will ask mm-hmm. certain people to be mentors.
All right. Because I know they're being sworn in later this month.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there should be a little get together for you guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
I receive a certificate and they swear in.
So. Okay. Kind of like incoming.
Outgoing.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Okay, what about citizens' comments? Any citizens' comments out there? Any citizens' comments? Seeing no citizens' comments, we'll move on to our schedule of events, if you will, the agenda. So we're starting with the golf division. Dan's on vacation, so I guess Ray will be delivering his.
Yep. So, and yeah, just to provide the committee with an overview, typically every month there'll be a report from each of the divisions, gives an overview of operationally what's going on, projects that are going on, updates on things, and then it's not every meeting, but it's fairly often that we've got initiatives or resolutions that have to come through this committee, either from here straight to the board or from here to finance and on to the board. I know that there's a couple things in the works. There's an intergovernmental agreement with Lake County that Clement will talk a little bit about under his report. It's for construction of a roundabout. They're proposing Highway County Trunk Highway EZ or 39th Avenue on the state line that they're going to pay for. So it's a pretty good project for us. And there's a couple other things that are going to be coming up. There's
access map.
Access, yeah. So we passed an access management policy last month or the month before, and the first development access management corridor that we're defining is going to be coming. There are actually three of them that we're working on for Highway S, Highway H, and Highway E. And that's where the most development, at least as far as county trunk highways is, that's where the most of it is taking place right now. And the concept is with that we're going to try to keep ahead of it so that, like, the big investment we just made in Highway S, which really has improved the safety and efficiency of that road, we want to be able to preserve that, as much of that as we can, as development inevitably occurs there, by limiting or managing the access points for that to happen. So it doesn't turn into Highway 50, basically, is what we want to avoid. So those things are two things that will be coming up. There'll be other stuff too, but for tonight we wanted to keep it kind of basic so that we could start and get people familiar with what we're doing. And tonight it's just going to be reports. So with that said, Dan's report, he put together pretty straightforward. The spring has not been friendly to golf or construction or any of that, or farmers at this point. Surprisingly though, the two events they had a senior scramble and they had a spring. Both of those were sold out. And so they've had the few days there has been fairly decent weather, even marginally decent weather. There's been quite a few golfers, but there's still it's not been a great spring, let's just say that so far. A league play started a little bit last week and in earnest this week. There'll be about 600 league players. That's a good number for us. It's been pretty consistent the last couple years, up from probably pre-COVID years. They've got a couple of demonstration events coming up. Dates and times are on the website for anybody that's interested. They really do a pretty good job out there now with some of the equipment, training equipment and analysis equipment they've got. They can pretty much hold their own with anybody as far as being able to improve a golfer's game if they so desire. And everything they've got equipment-wise is pretty competitively priced. Hiring's been good so far for them for their maintenance and clubhouse staff. They're about five folks short on the maintenance side at Brightondale, and that's it. Tets is at full staff, and Brightondale clubhouse is at full staff. We are looking at the feasibility of a project to replace the irrigation system on the original 1972 Red Pines 9-hole course. We're not sure if we're going to be able to do it. We're just doing the design work right now, but as with most things, pricing and availability of contractors is, I'm going to say, been affected by everything that's going on. Once we get the irrigation system designed, we'll decide. We're probably going to at least go out for bids just to see what's out there, but we're going to be pretty cautious about it. It needs to be done. We're spending somewhere between 25 and 50 grand a year to replace and keep the thing working right now. It needs to be replaced. Everything's at end of useful life. Thankfully, all the other holes on the course, the other 36 holes, are all, we've replaced all that. We replaced the pump house with a state-of-the-art pump house about 5 years ago. So the rest of the irrigation system is in really great shape. It's the reason actually we were able to capitalize the last two drought years. We were able to put, I forget how many millions, maybe tens of millions of gallons of water on the course and kept Brightondale in really good shape. And they were able to capitalize on it, having two really good years, the last two record years in revenue the last 2 years. So that's, we'll see what happens with that. Other small projects that got going on. Pets carts were all replaced about a year ago, and we're still finishing up, because our crews are doing it, the feathering in of the edges of those pads to the rest of the course. That's going to be an ongoing kind of just picking away at a kind of a project. Irrigation startup, they've already blown things up and recharged the system, and it's good to go at both courses for the season. And they just continue with, there's always trees to clean up and take down and debris to clean up. Though we did a lot of brushwork over the winter at Brightondale. So that's an overview of what's going on in Gulf right now.
Questions?
Just to touch upon the golfing fees, when that happens.
So golf fees are set by this committee, and it's February of every year. We'll bring recommendations to the committee. It's approved at the committee. It doesn't go from here to the board. It's one of the functions that's handled by the committee. As are park fees. Park fees are typically brought to the committee in December because they start taking reservations for pavilions and things January 1st. And so you typically set the parks fees in December.
And they set them the same as last year, this year, I think.
Right. Both. I'm trying to remember. The golf fees were definitely fees the same as last year. Yeah. The parks fees, there was a little tweak to something because of the, we were charging too much to the out-of-county residents that, to be consistent with state law, we had to tweak that, but it's, right.
Any other questions about golf? Right.
If I may, to follow up on the golf fees, from what I've read or seen, our fees are nominal.
Our fees are
competitive or nominal?
I would say our fees are on the spectrum based on, they do market research every year. If the midpoint's here, this is the high end, this is the low end, we're probably just to the, towards the low end off median. So we're just below median.
Okay, it read different in the paper this weekend, so it read that we were much below markets.
For the county?
Yeah, that's the impression. Yeah, that's the impression I had.
I think if you compare to some golf courses, we probably are, but others, we're going to be higher. Like,
right. It depends.
Like Big Oaks and Maplehurst and all that. Yeah.
If you look locally within Kenosha County, like relative to Twin Lakes, Bristol Oaks, Maple Crest, we're kind of right near that median. But if you look just outside the community, we're definitely low. Yeah. When you start to look west or south, north to a little extent, yeah, we definitely will.
Thank you.
Any other questions at all? All right. Thank you, Ray. I guess you can start the park side.
I guess so. So for Matt, Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park, this is the park on the west end. For those of you that are Eastenders, is off of County Trunk Highway KD, County Trunk Highway F. There's actually two entrances to that park now. There was the one that was on KD Park, was often referred to for years as KD Park, formerly converted to Veterans Memorial Park when we built the pavilion last year, the Honor Pavilion, up on the hill in the entrance that comes off of Highway F. And part of that, the next phase, so we built the pavilion, did some trail networking that was constructed as part of phase one. Phase two is now actually starting to build out. We want to put a year-round restroom facility at the pavilion area so that it can host veterans events, as well as there is a master plan for the whole park that has includes six pavilions that encircle the lake that form a star, a six-pointed star for the six branches of the military. We've got a fairly significant anonymous corporate donation to fund one of those, the Army Pavilion. And so we went out to bids. We developed the design specifications for the pavilion and the bathroom, went out for bids in early this year. Bids came in over budget. We worked with our purchasing department and the contractor to kind of value engineer things down and get them within the budget for those two buildings. And I think they just signed the contract for that building last week. So both buildings are scheduled to be constructed this year, should be within budget, and they should be done by the year end, as long as there's no real strange supply chain hiccups for anything.
that's not happening.
So that's a big deal. That's really a big deal.
Are those bathrooms like the one you put in the pets, are they year-round?
It will be similar in that it's going to be year-round, and I believe there's three or four holes per side, men's and women's. Yeah, so it's going to be similar to that. Old Settlers Park Band Shelter. This has been kind of a joint project. Folks are familiar with the October. Go ahead.
Do you have the plans at all? I mean, just so I can understand what's going on these projects at all?
Yes,
how do we get copies of what the plans are?
We can get you the master plans for the whole park so you can see what's going on to give you the overview of everything that's going on.
Yeah. And then how much of the budget there was is taxpayer funded, or was it 100% donated, or where's the split on the...
This one is going to be a combination. I believe there's parkland development funds that are in there, which are funds, there's a combination of non-local taxpayer funding in there. There's a contribution from waste management that goes in there. There's a contribution from the beer garden that goes into there. There's contributions from Boundless Adventures. Basically any of the private partners that we've partnered with over the last few years. There's a certain percentage that's part of those lease arrangements that goes into that fund, and the money is there specifically for parkland improvements. So there's a piece of the budget that comes from that. There's a piece of the budget that would come from, I don't think there's any stewardship grant funding in this particular phase of the project, but I believe the rest would all be bonded funds, that county bonded funds. So okay. Does that answer your...
There's a lot of moving parts in there, so
yes.
just trying to understand on each project. Is that brought forward? Do we talk about that at a committee level, or is that, you know, how do we? I know that some of the, we're kind of jumping in midstream on some of this stuff. So
probably the best thing would be, I mean, we can provide general information like the master plans for that to the whole committee, but I would say if anybody wants to do a deeper dive into it, it's probably better if we just have you talk directly with Matt and he can spend as much time as you want walking through it in great detail. It would probably be more efficient.
Okay.
Eric, but if you want to go forward with that and talk to Matt, if you want to put out an email to the committee to see who else would like to join your
arrival. So, I guess it's not only for parks here, but it's for everything. So, kind of like, where are we at? You know, seeing as we're kind of jumping in midstream on this stuff. You know.
So the tour.
I was just
the tour may help with some of that. That tour, because we'll be able to spend probably an hour each with each of the division heads to go over everything in more detail, because there's a fair amount going on. Yeah, so it's going to be, there's a lot to try to cover. But we can do it. It's just figuring out the best way to do it that's going to get you what you need. In the meantime, we can get you the master plan, at least to get a start so you can see
what
that
is.
Quick question. I did find the master plan online, but it says it was April 2021 was the last update. Do you guys have a more current one than that?
That should be the master plan.
So this is one? Okay.
Yeah, that should be the plan. Thank you. Yeah, that's a good point, because there is actually a lot of this information that is online too, poking around, but Matt still will be able to streamline that process and getting you
where
you
I just don't want to be looking at the wrong thing or something that's updated.
Right.
Because there's a lot of them.
Old Settlers Park Band Shelter. So this, for those of you on the West End, are probably familiar with Oktoberfest that gets held every year in Paddock Lake at Old Settlers Park. The private group that kind of sponsors that has been taking a portion of their revenues they've generated over the last, I don't know how many years that's been going on, at least five, I think, now. They've raised $90,000, and they're contributing that to create this band shelter. The band shelter was estimated to cost $135,000. When we went out for bids, like most things, bids came in, low bid was $171,000. We do have authorization from the county executive to use, and we had budgeted, there was $90,000 from them. I think we had budgeted $30,000 or $40,000 would have been for $135,000, I think was the original budget, or $130,000. And the balance can come from parkland development. The county executive has authorized that to happen so that we can move ahead with this project as well. Petrified Springs Park, always a bunch of stuff going on there. Still our busiest park, well north of a million visitors a year to Petrified Springs Park. Carlisle Family Dog Park, they're doing a refresh and kind of refurbish of that. Trying to plant a grass mix that has a little bit more robust root growth. It's supposed to go down, I think, at least a foot, the roots are, so it should hopefully be able to take a heavier traffic load, which the dog parks get. So they're doing a kind of a refresh of that this spring. Pavilion number 3 had some structural issues, and those have been repaired. We bid that project. That one actually came within budget. It was a small project. I think that was only about $50,000. And that's been completed. Playground number 4, this is kind of the, for those of you not super familiar with pets, but when you drive through it, playground number 4 was the kind of premier playground in the center of the park. Problem was it was built on an isthmus of where the river wraps around it. So every time we would get a flood, that would be completely flooded out. All the sand or other softening debris would be flushed out. So what we did as part of the restoration, that part of the river has been restored. It's phase 2, which was completed last year, of the Pike River restoration within the park. That was all restored. The river's looking really good. We actually took a bridge that was on Highway KR that was only a few years old but was going to get disposed of as KR was being reconstructed for the Foxconn project. We got that bridge and repurposed it into Pets Park so that we could go from floodplain, where the playground equipment was, up to high ground across the river, and we're going to reestablish playground number 4 on that high ground out of the floodplain. That's what this project is to do. Bids for that, we have packaged it as one package, but had broken it up into modules, anticipating that bids were going to come in high. They did come in high, so we were able to break that bid package back down, working with our purchasing department just the purchasing department. And there's only one piece of it that we're bidding out now, which is the site work. Everything else is going to be purchased, like all the playground equipment, we purchased off of bid, a government bid, blocking on the term right now, but it's basically, we're talking pre-bid already, and you buy from a vendor based on the same pricing they give all government entities. And then we're going to self-perform some of that work as well. So by doing those 3 things, kind of getting creative, we're able to bring that within budget. We don't know that for sure because the bid for the site work is due the 5th this week. If that comes within budget, then we should be able to proceed with reestablishing that playground number 4 up out of the floodplain. It'll be a big deal once that's complete.
You said the bridge is already installed and done? The
bridge is installed, was done as part of the restoration of the river last year. Yeah.
Was the previous playground equipment repurposed elsewhere or whatever?
Most of the stuff that was there was from, I'm going to say, maybe some as old as the 40s, some maybe into the 90s. But there's a little bit of it, I think it's going to be repurposed, but most of it is going to be new stuff.
John used to play on it.
I used to play on it.
Yep. Right.
In the 60s.
Yeah.
It was there.
The previous county exec wanted to save all of it, not for nostalgia reasons, just because he likes the element of danger, because kids don't have any danger. Yeah. With everything now, it's so safe. And so we kind of talked him out of that. So.
This stuff's expensive.
It is expensive.
Yeah, that's right.
You lived through it, you know you were tough.
So Pike River Phase 3, again, it's all within, this is the part of the Pike River we've been working to restore that's within the park boundaries itself. So Phase 1 went from just north of Highway A into the park, maybe half of a mile, not quite, maybe a third of a mile. And then Phase 2 went from there about two-thirds of the way through the park. And now the last piece of the restoration of the river within the park is in the design phase this year. Next year will probably be fundraising, grant applications and stuff in 23, targeting a 24 construction for that last phase within the park. And then we are planning on working with Parkside to continue the restoration through their property that's adjacent to the Pets Park. that, what's interesting is that because of what Mount Pleasant has done already on the North Branch, and what we've done in the park already, folks that are just downstream of there that would every year, now the last 2 years have been drought years, so we'll see how it goes. But we haven't had any complaints. I haven't gotten phone calls from the usual folks this year already. And the folks that are just north of Parkside, where the river crosses A, it's a fairly densely populated area, and those folks would always, if we got an inch of rain, they would call and be complaining about the flooding that's taking place in the park. Some of that is already being mitigated by some of these restoration activities that are taking place, so it's good. One of the, I won't get into it because there's I know more about that whole situation than I need to. So phase three is basically in the design phase. Pringle Nature Center, AmeriCorps, which is I believe a federal program, but I'm not 100% sure. The Pringle folks were able to secure some labor through them that are going to be doing some projects at Bristol Woods from May 5th through the beginning of June. That's the first time I believe that's happened, so that'll be a good use for them to get some invasive species stuff done, some trail rehabbing going on. There's they're constructing some natural playground stuff out there as well. So that's what Pringle's going on. I think, I don't know if most of you know that the chairman of the Pringle board passed away unexpectedly.
Oh.
Barry Thomas. Actually, fairly recently, and I want to say within the last month or so. Totally unexpected. Warren Leishman, I believe, was the vice chairman. He's now the chairman. I don't know if that's an interim thing. Very dedicated guy as well. So if Warren's going to be the guy, the Pringle board will be in good hands yet going forward. Seasonal recruitment, they've been in pretty good shape with parks. And the only thing that they're really struggling with is lifeguards, as are all municipalities. Though I know we hired, I think, three in the last 2 days. There was three folks interviewed, and all three were ringers, so they hired those three. But I think they're still short about five from being fully staffed, five or six. Thielen Multi-Use Trail, again, for those of you on the West End are probably familiar with some of this, but Thielen owns sand and gravel operations in the western part of the county and then just over the border into McHenry and Lake counties. And they are an ace corporate citizen in that they came to us with a plan to create a multi-use trail out there that'll connect a bunch of park properties in the Illinois side with properties up here, and it would make use of their property by granting permanent easements to the county to construct multi-use trails. So there wouldn't need to be any right-of-way acquired or any easements purchased by the county to do this. It would really add greatly to the network on the western end of the county. It's still in the development stages. I know the Thielens are working with some issues out on their end, but the goal would be to develop a working design for that this year yet, if all goes as planned.
And it's why I've asked to also resurrect the comprehensive bicycle plan, because this is something that has never been talked about back in 2012, 2013 when that was done. So we're going to bring that up here soon. You know, I don't know if it'll be at the end of this month, but hopefully by the end of June. It's possible I can get Steve Thielen out here to also give us any updates that he may have as well, just to the board too. So,
it's really a very cool thing that they proposed to us, Lake County and McHenry County, pulled together all the villages, and there was probably 20 municipalities involved, and they coordinated pulling it all together. If it can all be put together, it'll be a heck of a feature to have.
One question I had about that is that, do they retain private ownership of those trails, or how does that work?
So the way it would work is, conceptually what's being talked about is 50 or 75 year permanent easements, but permanent easements 50 to 75 years. Trails would be constructed by us, and then we got full use, we would maintain them as public trails, but they would grant us that property, so we wouldn't need to acquire any property in order to construct. that's high level, kind of the basic overview.
Should there be a sundown after 50 to 75 years?
50 to 75 years, yeah.
They have to have a sunset date on them, but they can be re-upped after that, so.
Are you talking paved trails?
Those would most likely be paved trails.
Yeah, we have the equipment to pave it, right?
Well, I will say this, that is not, Mr. Thielen is not in favor of paved trail. He wants the trails how they are in Illinois. So just let you know, so you aren't surprised.
And maybe, I don't know, Matt's been really involved in those details.
Yeah, he
I'm assuming it's paved
that,
because most of our stuff runs right. Paved.
One thing he was concerned about is if it was paved and he needed to get underneath there and do anything, because he's going across one part of his property the other. He didn't want to have to dig up stuff to do it and then replace it with paved trail. That's one. But all of the bike trails that he rides on are all not paved. They're, I don't know, crushed limestone, whatever.
Crushed limestone or
Again, bond. Yep. Right now it's a non-issue, but going forward, you know, that's something just to be aware of.
Good to know. And like I say, Matt may...
Yeah, Matt may already be aware.
Because he talks with them regularly.
Right.
So that's the Thielen Trail. Then he's just got listed a bunch of events. He'll update that as things get added for the summer. There's typically a whole bunch of stuff going on in the parks, and pretty much all of it's free or minimal charges. So yeah, that's kind of everything that's going on in parks.
Right. Just on parks, Kemper. Just want to mention a little bit about Kemper.
Sure. So
because it's in the city, but it's this county park.
Right. So the Kemper Center is down on the lakefront on 3rd Avenue, so roughly 63rd and 3rd. And there's a main campus, which was an all-girls school. I believe most of it was constructed in the 19th century and then used up until mid-1970s. Yeah. That became a county park in the late 70s, I think. They got a stewardship grant and got that whole campus, as well as the Anderson Art Center, which is the Anderson Mansion, was affiliated with that as well. In fact, I believe that was actually used as kind of collateral as to get some of the original DNR grants to get Kemper. So that whole campus is a county park. The way it works is Kemper Center is an independent board and body, corporate entity, that runs that they have a lease arrangement with the county. I believe the last lease is up in 27, okay. And there's actually a movement now to extend that further, because there's an alumni group that wants to do a pretty significant project on the fourth floor of the main building there to create a museum. And they don't want to do that, raise that money and make those investments without having a longer term lease than the few years that are left on the existing lease.
And a building sealed from the...
And the building weatherproof, yes. So, and that's a project you'll hear a little bit about as well tonight. That's kind of an ongoing project. So if you haven't been to Kemper, that's a fascinating tour in itself, because the buildings are complicated, really significant historical structures, and there's going to be plenty of work to keep them preserved. We did a great project on the Anderson Art Center 3 years ago or 2 years ago that completely restored the exterior of that building. That restoration should be good with preventive maintenance, should be good for the first one. The house was constructed, I believe, in 1929. It was in the just before the market crashed is when that building was constructed. So it made it almost 100 years before it needed a full exterior restoration. We did that a few years, I think it's 2 years ago now that was completed. And with proper maintenance, it should be good for another, for sure, 50 plus years anyways. So that's part, and there's art exhibits. I just saw something in the paper that there's that's got a separate board that, again, kind of manages that facility for us.
Hey, Matt Collins has some plans available, too, for the lakefront protection.
Rocks. Oh, right. So that's
the granite and all the other.
Yeah,
that's all engineered already.
Right. That's
1,500 feet.
You know more than me. I just remember the number, the dollar number.
Well, it's out the city of Kenosha doing theirs. Right. Put them all together.
And the grant applications that we've made to the feds have, I'm going to say, for the most part, been pretty well coordinated with Baldwin's office, because she seems to be plugged into that. So I can't remember what committee she sits on, but she's been shepherding so that the city and us are both applying for funds to protect that shoreline as well, as everybody's trying to protect their shoreline on Lake Michigan. Because that's a big number. I want to say that's about a $30+ million project to restore that seawall that's on the edge of that Kemper campus.
And we're looking at other materials.
Right. Yep. Yep.
Does that extend to the Carroll Beach, or is that separate?
That one's separate. Yeah, Carroll Beach would be. Yep.
Because I know it's right up to there. So I'm sure.
Carroll Beach will be a little further south.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what they did at Southport Beach.
Southward, yeah.
Yep, to protect the treatment plant.
Yes,
900 feet. Cost the city $9 million to do that. But it's the same engineering, basically. If you talk to Collins, he's got the same, I think it's out of Madison, the same company probably engineered it.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Rocks came from Wausau.
Is that the same thing they did over in front of Kennedy Park, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Similar, recently, yep.
With all the...
That's where Jay comes from, too, Wausau.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's parks. And then I was going to just say a little bit that every month we get a report from the naturalist at Pringle. So the way Pringle works, that's again a county park, but the Pringle board was established because the original, the person that, I can't remember now if it was donated all the property that now makes Bristol Woods, was the Pringle family. And part of that was they wanted that to have an ongoing environmental conservation kind of mission, and that was part of the covenants of that property, their property being donated or transferred to the county. So the Pringle Board runs that park. We support them in terms of maintenance and kind of high level stuff that are required. We just redid the roads and parking lot there 2 or 3 years ago. But as far as the programming that takes place, the Pringle Center is self governing in that regard. And they report to us, they give us reports every month as to what's going on. And then, as Chairman Gordigan indicated, we typically meet out there at least once a year just to meet with the staff and kind of keep a pulse on everything from the committee's level. So that's pretty much what's going on at parks.
Any questions on parks?
Is it possible to get is there a master plan or general overall view for the as part of Pike River restoration? I know you said like phase three, they're designing phase three, is that what you said?
Designing phase three right now. Yep,
so
this year.
Is there currently like a master plan for all three phases, or is it still a work in progress?
Yeah, so there's actually a plan, a high level plan that covered the first three phases, which takes up the entirety of Pets Park, mm-hmm. and then it goes, I think there's three more phases into the adjacent Parkside property as well. And there's a plan that covers that all.
Yeah, I couldn't find a link to that on the website. If I could get a copy of that would be great. We can see that.
Better question, I was thinking the same thing. So if you could share that.
Yeah, but obviously we just go to the whole committee.
Yep.
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 Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Parks Division, any other questions? Ray, I think you're still on.
Okay. Well, I'll switch to be Frank. So,
it's even Frank said Clement.
Frank,
drop those glasses.
But I hope he takes mine too.
Yeah.
In facilities, we basically got facilities broken up into two, I'm not going to say divisions, but two functions. So, Matt Storino is just recently taken over for Mike Trant, retired just actually a week or two ago. And he's taken over, he was our HVAC technician. He's now the facilities manager. He handles all the operations, so all of the building chiefs and all the operations stuff goes through him, and he manages that at all the campuses. In addition to that, he's got projects. Smaller projects that are typically going on, or more, let's say, nuanced projects at some of the facilities. So he'll be doing a report on those. Frank will typically be doing the projects that are a little bigger in scope or more just larger in scale. And so the ones he's working on right now are on this report, KCAB Narrow security modifications, really in kind of the tail end of this. This actually started back in late 20 after the civil unrest was how a lot of this stuff actually came into being. So there was a bunch of damage to a number of the historic buildings, the courthouse, the administration building, were damaged as a result of that. And this project started kind of, that's where it had its roots. And these are kind of the last pieces of that puzzle. So in the administration building is really where we're at now. That's got the treasurer's office, the county clerk, the register of deeds, HR, land information office, all those very publicly accessible type departments. We're putting in counters right now that are not fortress-like because we didn't want that to look that way, but by the same token, we wanted to increase the security because everything was open. Everything was open and accessible in every floor. So this is the tail end of those projects to kind of, let's say, harden those counters a bit for all those highly public areas. Unfortunately, it's the prudent thing to do given kind of the environment that we've been in now for a while. In addition to that, the courthouse and the DA's office, which is in the Molinaro building directly to the north of the courthouse, there's been some hardening of those structures as well. Again, you got to balance kind of the public access thing and fortress kind of thing against providing adequate security. So we've used some pretty high-tech film on the windows that's invisible to anybody walking by. But by the same token, you can wail on that stuff with a sledgehammer for about 20 minutes to a half hour before you can break it out. And it doesn't look like it's any different than any other kind of thermal paint. So there's some stuff like that that we put in place so that those buildings should be better protected, hopefully never have to be tested again, but this will be wrapping up that project. Then there's a parking lot that's just to the west of the administration building. There were three buildings we purchased over the past probably 5 years, demoed those last year, and then constructed the parking lot there. Just finishing that project up, there's some landscaping, fencing, punch list stuff that needs to be done there, but essentially that is done. And that completes all the work we had planned for that area for now. Kemper water infiltration repairs, this has been an ongoing. We're kind of taking chunks of this building. We're starting on the east side of that campus because that's the side facing the lake that really gets hammered the hardest with the nor'easter type storms. And we want to make sure that that's buttoned up and weather tight. So there's typically what's involved is tuck pointing, window replacement, different sealants and things like that are used that are historically correct and or at least appear to be historically correct even though they're high-tech sealants. That project just got awarded, if I remember right. Construction's expected to start in the next couple weeks and completed by mid-August, but there's still a number of phases to that. This will do the eastern part of the floor where the museum is planned. So it'll start to seal up at least the east side of the building so that if there were interior work to be done, it would be protected from the elements.
And the Kemper Center, that facility is on the list of historic registry or something?
Yes, for sure.
Like that.
Yep.
So we have to take care of it. Two, there's a lot of money coming from private money coming in to put that museum in the fourth floor, and they just can't do it without two things. It's extending the lease and making sure it's secure, because they're not going to put hundreds of thousands of dollars in that to have it continue as it is now. So there is going to be some commitment from us, but there had to be anyway, because again, we have to keep this building up by federal standards, I guess, or statutes or whatever it is. So
that's the Kemper one. Then KCDC, we've got a couple of interesting HVAC projects.
Did you want to, just so everyone knows, KCAB is Kenosha County Administration Building.
Yep. So KCAB is Kenosha County Administration Building. KCDC is Kenosha County Detention Center. That's the one that's on Highway H. KCC is Kenosha County Center, this building that we're in. The other one you'll hear is KCJC, which is Kenosha County Job Center. That's the one on South Sheridan. I think those are the main, you might hear FMB, that's a fleet maintenance building that's in the Civic Campus. That was an old, it was actually a cabinetry building that was taken on tax deed that we converted then to, it's a fleet maintenance building for all the law enforcement vehicles that are downtown. City cops, sheriff, those two agencies. That's actually an interesting building. That would be a good one to tour. So KCDC HVAC replacement, phase one. That construction started on January 25th, scheduled to be complete by the end of July. Basically, at the detention center, you've got a large, sprawling building. I believe it was built in 97. Most of the rooftop units are at end of useful life, as is the roof. So the plan, we started on this a few years back, to replace the rooftop units in kind of a strategic way, so then we could come behind that and then do the roofing in those sections as well, and kind of pick at it in phases. Like most things, these are interesting now with costs as well. The phase one was actually awarded last August, so that one, you know, everything was under contract and there was no changes to anything. Phase two, that design and engineering and spec process is in process right now. Matt's intimately involved in helping with that, given his knowledge on HVAC controls and HVAC systems. And I think that is planned to go to bid July or August?
Certainly in that couple weeks. We're going to meet with Fleming. We have a design review this week, and then we'll be meeting with purchasing.
Oh, so we're getting that close. Okay, so then it'll probably be June, July that we'll go out for a bid. We'll see where that goes. One of the things that we've done over the years is most, without getting too deep into this, but trust me, I like to geek out on this stuff too. So Johnson Controls, Trane, good Wisconsin companies, but also very vertically integrated. They're like the Gillette razor. Buy the Gillette razor, guess what? You got to buy all the blades. That's their business model as far as their HVAC goes. So once you're locked in, you're locked in. You don't get to competitively bid. So we went with an open architecture control system. So our controls will work with any brand of equipment. We buy the rooftop units in a dumb state, and then we can hook them up. And we did that intentionally as kind of a long-term strategy so we don't get locked in to contracts. We still have, there's no system is perfect, and we still have challenges with even that approach to things, but that's, from a strategy standpoint, we put that in place about 5 years ago, and that's the approach that we've been using. So that's what's going on there with HVAC. Those are the biggest HVAC projects we've got going on right now. In the lobby at the detention center, the sheriff wanted some, what started out to be some fairly minor security enhancements in the lobby. So we budgeted, I don't want to say a nominal amount, 50 grand last year. Now, as we've been deep into the design part of that project, there's been a few things that they've, I think, you know, you start to dig into a small project like that, you start to discover there's other things that really should be included. So we don't have a final estimate, but I know that project is going to cost, or it's got estimated to be a lot more than what we've got budgeted for now. I mean, not like, you know, seven figures or anything, but I think if it's probably going to be more like in the $150,000 to $200,000 range as opposed to the $50,000 range. We'll know more about that in the next few weeks. I don't think you've been involved in that one, Matt, but once we get the design complete, we'll make a decision on whether we're going to bid it out and get an actual hard number, or if we look to see if there are other options to, we might want to put it off until next year and just budget for the 23 budget. So more to come, basically, on that project. KCC renovation project, that's in this building. That's a very interesting project. 2 years ago, because Planning and Development Department, staff had shrunk over time as more towns become villages. The villages have to do their own planning and development. I'm going to simplify and just say that. Whereas the towns, when they function as towns, they still can take advantage of the county's resources. So over time, as we picked up Village of Bristol probably 15 years ago, Village of Summers a few years ago, combined Village of Salem Lakes, the number of staff in the planning and development department has shrunk. And as that shrinks, they had a lot of space in there compared to when it was originally constructed in 1995. And so we took then UW Extension, which staff had also shrunk, combined. They had a whole suite. At one time, there was that many staff in UW Extension. Combined, moved, put them all together in one suite, freed up an entire suite of space, and then looked to see what would be the highest and best use for that. The Sheriff's Department, to improve their efficiencies from a patrol standpoint, wanted to move all their, centralize all their patrol in the geographic dead center of the county, which is here. And so they are going to take over the old, most of the old UW Extension suite will be centralized patrol operations for the Sheriff's Department, which will improve service, I think, countywide, being centralized as opposed to having everything down in the lake. In addition to that, the backup 911 dispatch center that we have out here, which is the backup for the main dispatch center down in the public safety building, you know, so I gave Chairman Nordigan a tour of it just last week, and we can give, you know, all of you a tour of it. It's less than optimal. Basically, when they have to use that facility as a dispatch center, they have to park the mobile command center from the Sheriff's Department in the parking lot and kind of do a
relay,
tag team relay kind of a thing, because the facilities aren't adequate. So what this will allow us to do is blow out a wall, create the space they need so they can have a true backup 911 dispatch center out here that is fully functional. So that's part of that project.
And they can do the training out here.
And they can do the training as opposed to trying to work training into an active live dispatch center they've got downtown. So it really will be a huge improvement for joint services dispatch capabilities. Then in the elected officials office, although we've got secure areas for ballot retention and equipment storage and all that kind of stuff, they aren't really dedicated. They're just places that have been, that place is empty, let's put a lock on it, nobody can get in there, and that's where we're gonna throw the ballots. We wanna be a little bit more intentional about that given everything that's taken place in the last few years. So we're gonna do some improvement to some of that space so that there is an intentionally designed space for all election security related activities. So that's part of that project. The other piece that's a huge piece is we're gonna add an elevator in the main lobby out here so that we can access about 2,400 square feet of finished office space upstairs that has never been accessible since the building was constructed in 95. That will become a backup emergency EOC, Emergency Government Center, as well as multi-purpose room. So that will be able to be used as backup or in addition to the big hearing room that we've got out here, which is in pretty high demand actually for all kinds of things. Trainings, there's all kinds of stuff that takes place in this big hearing room. So that project is the scope of it is to do all of that work. The design is in process right now. I believe the design is targeted for end of August to have bid level documents together. We've got money budgeted this year. I believe it's just shy of $2 million to do all of that. And we'll see. We'll see. But that will be a big project that will add a lot of value.
I can say this. There is a ton of area not being used, a ton of volume not being used in this, not utilized at all, just sitting empty. And I think it's, you know, to the point where we need to use it, or at least find a use for it, especially for doing all these upgrades. And the backup
to the EOC.
Again, I think you even mentioned, I was surprised they weren't out here during the riots doing it here, because they could have. But it's a very cramped space, and it's probably a lot of bleed over back and forth because they're basically back to back in there. So that I can see there's a lot of validity in that. But when you do take a tour, I'm sure Ray or whoever's going to do it will take you through everything and show you everything that this is, you know, looking at doing. But this is sorely underutilized, this facility, I believe. Go ahead.
Good question then. If we're going to increase activity or usability inside the facility out here, including sheriff's, police, EOC center, centralized patrol operations, do you need to harden this facility as well then? So are you budgeted for that?
Yep, so that's included in the budget. It's going to be some hardening, but it's not, again, going to change physically. We're not going to like block up the windows or anything. The sheriff doesn't want that. And it's not necessary really for what they're going to have out here. So there will be a hardening component to that in terms of security and the filming and stuff like that. The area that will be the public area in there will be hardened, pretty damn hardened. But yeah, so there'll be hardening and that's included in the budget right now.
How about the parking facility as you expand the use of the building? Do we have you considered how much parking we have? And will that be sufficient or do we need to expand that?
Yeah, no, so the parking out here, one of the things, there was a number of things in this building when they originally constructed that was definitely long-term vision, and so parking will be adequate for what is needed from a public standpoint. At some point, if they may need to have a place to park squads, but right now the sheriff's policy is the squads all go home with the guys, so there's no need to store squads here. If that continues, which I from what I understand, and I'm not that close to it, but from what I understand, it's working really well because these folks, they take the squads home and they're able to go right where they don't have to check in downtown and then disperse. It's a much more efficient approach. So the answer to the first part is, from a public standpoint, there's plenty of space for access, even going forward with this addition. From a functional standpoint, in terms of the sheriff's operations, who's to say 10 years from now, a different sheriff might want to do something different? We know that this building, based on the number of lane miles that have been added and are projected to be added, this building's going to need to be addressed within the next, I'm going to say, five-ish years. So at that point, you could reassess this and package whatever needed to be addressed from a parking standpoint with that project. So that's kind of what we're looking at.
Quick observation on the transient squads, I'll call them. They're parked right at the turn lane in the front, the drop-off area, for convenience. They should probably have a designated area some way. Otherwise, they're blocking access, egress, and entry to the building as well.
Yeah, so the only times they're doing that right now, and I think it's all kind of a work in progress, is at shift change. So then when they come in the morning, usually like around 7 o'clock, you'll see squads there, a number of them. And then usually 2:30 to 3 o'clock, you'll see some. You might see one or more, one or two maybe, at other points in the day, if they're coming in to do like report writing or anything. But there typically aren't you know, more than that, other than those shift change times, unless you're seeing something different.
No, my observation, I was here for several of the ballot recounts, and they were out there with great frequency.
Yeah. So. And I don't know that day, because of the heightened activity going on in the building, I don't know if there was more, they were here more or not. I have no idea.
No, I'm just suggesting, as you're planning, stage them an area where they can gain access to the building as convenience and they can park in a transient manner. Probably makes sense.
Gotcha.
Just, you touched on a little bit with the sheriff having more of a command center here possibly, because during the riots that happened right down to the courthouse area where the sheriff's department is, they didn't have their command center there. They used the fire station from the city of Kenosha, outlying from some other area, but they didn't have, they didn't have anything that they come out here to do. So, but they didn't want to be right there in the middle of it either.
Yeah.
Well, I was. I was in the EOC for 2 days straight because there was a lot of stuff going that was monitored from the EOC.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Any other questions on facilities?
Do you have, is there a document that details kind of all the stuff that you listed anywhere?
All the different projects?
Well, like under the KCC renovation project, you just listed all those things. Does that live somewhere on the website? Or?
No, not yet.
So it's all still
conceptual? It's being designed, yeah. It's being designed right now.
It will be.
Yeah, but it's under design. We're working with the architects and engineers right now. So there's a budget for it. You know, it was approved in the budget last year, but those are pretty general descriptions that are in there.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. If you want a copy of it, when we have it done. Yeah.
Once we get it designed.
And again, that can all change based on when you go out for bid and all that, but at least right. You know yeah. The overall
plan. Who's the lead for that project here at the county?
Project lead for that is Frank Martinelli.
Okay.
Maybe Frank attended one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think those are all in line.
Now we go on to Clement Abuanga. Pronounce your last name.
Yeah, Abongo.
Abongo.
Yes.
Okay. I always say it wrong. But
no, it's fine.
Clement.
I was hoping that since we, you see, it's always very difficult to go after Ray, so I was just hoping that we just end the meeting.
Ray's coming up in
Ray, it looks like that's not an option. In any case, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point of the year, we are actually servicing the trucks and getting them ready for paving operations. That's basically what we've been doing this past month. I think almost set to go. We just kept a few trucks with plowing things because with the plows and get because you never know what might happen. We have like 6 inches of snow now. We are ready to go. We have a few trucks that could do that, but we are not hoping for that. And aside from that, we are also doing our regular routine maintenance, which is just ditching, asphalt patching, shouldering, and trash pickup, things like that, normal routine work. We're also doing, one of the things that for the new supervisors is that we are the maintenance arm for the state. So we do maintenance for the state. So you will see our trucks, our equipment on the state highway. We do that on a contract basis. So from time to for all my report, I'll also be giving updates on the kind of things that we do on state highways. Like in this case, we didn't generally do routine maintenance as well for the state highways. Sometimes we might do some specific things, like in this case we did a lot of brushing on state highway 45. We do things like crack sealing. We do run some special projects for the state, maintenance projects. It's more cost effective for them that way. So I'll be reporting on things like that as well. But again, it's just general maintenance, just like what we do for our county highways.
Just a question on that. Is that, I assume that they have a budget that they pay for all that stuff. And how do they lead that? Do they have a supervisor for the area that tells you what to do?
Yes. Generally, there's some basic routine maintenance that we can just automatically go ahead and do those stuff. But there's some major maintenance that will need authorizations. And they do have a coordinator for the Southeast region, for Kenosha County, and actually it's the same coordinator for Walworth County. But each of these counties, they do have coordinators from the state, and they kind of guide us so that to make sure that we are doing cost-effective maintenance applications of whatever we are doing and make sure that their budget is, you're getting the best bang for their buck, so to speak. Yes, we do have a coordinator.
Yeah. But on average, just trying to get a sense for how much work you do for the state versus the county and stuff, how much work in a season is state-funded versus county-funded?
Yeah, I'm supposed to know that, but I don't know that on top of my head. It do vary somehow very significantly. It's based on how much, usually the amount a year is determined more by how much snow you have that year.
Right.
Because based on how much snow, it tells them how much they're going to program for the next year. And if you have less snow, then you have more money to do construction and so. But again, they usually have a kind of a range where they usually budget for their maintenance. I don't have that upstairs right now, but I can follow up with you if you need to get
just
that.
Just out of curiosity, is that 20, 30, 40% of those probably in that neighborhood, right? Of your
Chris, have you got that?
It doesn't have to be down to the, because it goes to staffing as well. When you're looking for appropriate field people, the staff and things like that is a big deal.
Total expenses last year were about $9.5 million, and the state paid $3.6 million, so a third, a little over a third is the state.
Okay.
We didn't have a lot of snow, though.
Yeah, and it was a bad, I think it was a strong February from 2021, but it was a very dry November, December, extremely dry.
For winter.
Right, yeah. So the hope is that November or December would be a little bit stronger.
Yes, I understand. Here's the village, the same deal.
Yeah.
Salt barn's still full.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Okay, yeah. So that's for the state. Generally, also, when we have some kind of is the non-traditional maintenance or activities or collaborations with neighbors or what I'll call subsets of the counties, like the city, the village or towns. Sometimes we do report some of the things just to give you an idea. It's not for you to act, but just to keep you aware so that if you see things happening out there, then you know that we are keeping tabs on them and you feel comfortable that we are not. Things are not going through, falling through the cracks. In some cases, it's a way of showing that the county is also supporting the local municipalities. So this is just one case. In this case, where we are talking about the village of Pleasant Prairie, they have their Prairie Highlands subdivision. Those of you who are aware of it, it's just on the along the West Frontage Road between C and Q. And of course, the limit is, I would say, U. Yeah, that area there is the Prairie Highland Corporate Park, which is a park for the business park for the Pleasant Prairie. And they are really enhancing the facilities in that area. And they're doing a lot of pedestrian accommodations and cycling accommodations. And so they have a network of trails and sidewalks. And in the process of doing that, they'll have to be installing some of them within our highway right-of-way. We are just reporting this because it's happening on the highway right-of-way for you to know. We'll make sure that it's done to specifications and meet all the necessary standards that's supposed to be. So if anything evolves from there, we'll be reporting them here just to keep you abreast of what is happening. And this
those
is just one of them.
Trails and sidewalks are being put in on their dime, not ours.
Correct. But at the same time, we want to make sure it meets our standards. Right. So.
Okay. Thank you.
But if the county wants to help them, they'll gladly accept. Which is, we are not going to do that.
Thank you.
And then the other second phase of my report is generally talking about projects, how they are going, if we have challenges, and if there are things that we're going to be bringing up in for your attention to, maybe a resolution or things like that. We'll let you know, but generally I just report on the projects and usually just tell you how good they are going on, or if we have challenges too, I'll report on challenges as well. So this second phase now, I also try to separate the county projects from DOT projects so that just to give you a sense of what is happening and to give you a general idea, because since you are the Public Works Facility Committee, if you are confronted and they ask you some question, you can as well understand what is happening in whichever project that we are dealing with. I typically report only on construction. Sometimes I might report on design as well, especially one that it requires a lot of attention if we are having challenges in terms of right-of-way acquisition or in terms of some litigation, that possible litigation, then I'll start reporting on the design. Otherwise, I try to focus just mainly on construction. But if you also want to know more information about design, I can provide that as well. But generally, design is really boring. It's just because they're still designing. That would be the report. So I'll focus on construction here with Kenosha, here on county projects. I'll be talking more about the County Trunk Highway S project right now. The County Trunk Highway S project has been completed, and we are working on punch list. Unfortunately, the weather has not been very cooperative, so the punch list is very slow. And it's not in the report, but I'll just give you a heads up, because you might see us working on the pavement on the Highway S. Yesterday, I got information that the way the railroad did their, as a matter of fact, I got it this afternoon. Something is wrong with the panels that the railroad installed on S. So when it vibrates a lot, and so it's affecting the pavement close to the rails, because it's vibrating too much. So I just found out this evening, as a matter of fact, with some pictures. So you have some kind of a small crack, some crack around. It's very annoying. And so we've reached out to the railroad, and of course it's UP Railroad. It's going to take forever, but I just wanted to let you know that if you see us working on some of the pavement that's on the main line, that's what it is. It's sometimes it's caused by the railroad. There's circumstances beyond our control. We've also identified some spots where the pavement is not reacting as optimal as we wanted, and I've told them that has to be replaced. So we'll be doing all of that. I just want to give you that though S is completed, at times you might see them walking on pavement.
So you have a lot of troubles with the railroad.
Okay. I'll need you.
Lots of problems.
So I'll need that help, especially with County Trunk Highway K project, which is the next one.
Sure.
Yeah, because
be careful.
I need that help.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
They're a big beast out there in Omaha. So yeah. They have quite the ivory tower out there, and I've been out there a few times.
Okay.
With them. On the private side, the company that I work for, Union Pacific, is one of our biggest customers,
mm-hmm.
and so we do a lot of work for them directly.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably have a public projects arm, mm-hmm. engineers that you deal with from the public side.
Mm-hmm.
I normally deal with the back side, like they're doing jobs, and their capital budgets and stuff. But
okay.
But people know people there, and like. Make a few calls.
Yeah, I'm so happy here. on a serious note, if you can help us with that, it's something that is not very tangible, and so people don't understand the expense or the cost of dealing with the railroad. And if we can minimize the length of time, it goes a long way to minimize the cost of the project. And those are just intangible costs that we don't usually pay attention to. That's why at the end you start realizing the project is $200,000 more than what you thought you were going to be. So it's going to be very beneficial for us.
Sure. No guarantees, but...
Yeah, I know. I know that. I understand.
The phone calls.
Yeah.
Very promising.
Yeah. Yeah, so... I haven't... I haven't shook hands with Lance Fritz yet, but he's visited some of our job sites.
Mm-hmm.
So he's all the CEO of UP.
All right. Thank you. Still on County Trunk Highway, as this is something that, as far as project is concerned, this is the part that makes me stay awake at night. Right of way acquisition. No matter what you do, you might think you have completed the project, and then out of a sudden, a lawyer, just because he's waiting for you to make that small slip, or you forget to do something, or we didn't forget anyway, but he's playing, he's capitalizing on the look on the gray area of the law. And so there are some properties that we acquired and we had settled, but because of the law has some provisions that he's taking advantage of. And so some, I think about three of these properties on S that we have acquired already, but they still have some legal activities going on. So so as it's going on, we'll be in court in sometime this month, I think on the 18th, for 3 days. So I just learned that I'll be in suit and tie. I don't
sure
know.
You'll look nice.
I only hope that it should be short, but so we'll be doing that, and whatever comes up, we'll keep you abreast of it and let you know what's going on. County Trunk Highway K project from 94 Court to UP Railroad in the city. Again, this section is a piece, it's a continuation of the reconstruction of Carway K in, from two lanes to four lanes. The county had already reconstructed the section between 31 and UP Railroad, if you're familiar with that area, just west of Indian Trail. Now, we've gone through the process. I don't need to go back through the dynamics. Ray and the former administration and they work together to come to an agreement to keep the process going. And so now my role is to make sure that I construct the project. So we are at that stage where we're constructing the project, and the project will actually be starting next week. We have a public information meeting scheduled for tomorrow at Indian Trail. It's an open forum. People come and they find out how the project is going to impact them. Just to give you a heads up, one of the greatest challenge is that they've been requesting that we should leave the road open to traffic during construction. Unfortunately, due to the geometric constraints and the massive nature of the operations, it's impossible to have the road open. And given the fact that you have two railroads close to each other, and they will have to be redoing the railroad signal. And once you remove the signal, by law, you have to close them. It had closure. So we thought about all of that. Unfortunately, we couldn't satisfy the public by giving them keep the road open while construction is going on. So
this, you just had a meeting on, did you not?
No, tomorrow.
That's coming up tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, tomorrow on the 3rd. From 4 to 6, if you're interested, you can stop over there. And then we're expecting them to be very interesting. And they will not be very friendly, because they really want the road open during construction.
How is this going to affect all of those businesses that are in between 50 and K? Because right now the only access they have is through 60th Street, at least for the time being. Like, you know, all those businesses, the church, the enterprise, there's a dog daycare back there. Like, the only access that they have right now is to go down 60th Street because Highway 50 is closed.
Okay. So I'll just give you a little bit of history. So about in 2017, 2018, there were all plans to reconstruct Highway S, Highway K, 158, and 50. The consensus that we arrived at that time was that we're going to keep two eastbound corridors, at least two eastbound corridors open while you construct two. So last year we constructed Highway S, and 50 was also under construction. So K and 158 was open. Highway S is completed and open. So we now move to K, and 50 is still going on. So we leave S and K open. So the idea was that it's never going to be convenient. So, and there's going to be one time that is so hot, and this is the time when K, because K is the most favorable corridor. It's very painful, but it's necessary. So we are hoping that we're going to be shifting traffic, those who are used to using K, to shift to 158. It's not too far, but is it going to be very convenient? The answer is no. But it's our only way that you give us enough time so that we can close down the road, use the shortest possible time and reconstruct it, and then you feel the pinch only for maybe 6 months instead of 2 years. And so with the businesses. We're going to do a lot of outreach with the businesses and see how we can coordinate the challenges with the coordination of the project and make sure to see how we can facilitate that. Again, I don't have a silver bullet for the solution, but the best time to know the solution is when the construction is ongoing and you can physically see how the traffic flow is going on, and then you can then take the traffic volume, the traffic flow, and work it out with what you have at hand. Because sometimes it's always good, you might have a good design on paper, but when you go to do the construction, then you realize that it's not working. Yes.
We drive this a lot, so I would think the public response is going to be negative for the reason that 50 is substantially incomplete. Mm-hmm. The feeders in and out, the ties, the bridge by Menards, etc. The pain point for K is going to be substantially higher. It's not just go to the next feeder, it's go east, then go up to the feeder, and then you finally get to come back around. I would think the public is going to be very traumatized having two major east-west corridors in 158 is not the most convenient for folks that are crossing back and forth. So is there a plan to delay or opportunity to delay any of it, or it's pretty much ongoing now? Isn't it?
Well, it's going to start next week. But you have utility work going. Yeah.
A lot of trucks on it today, I know that.
The truth about it is that no matter how you do it, the pain is going to be severe for 60, because 60 is the most convenient corridor. Even if you shift it to 158, Highway 50 is partially complete, partially under construction. But if you notice, from H going west is pretty much open. So we are hoping that if somebody is going to Highway 50, which is what we are counting on, it's not going on Highway 50 to go east, it's going on Highway 50 to go west.
Where you're okay.
Yes, and so if you're going to Highway 50 to go west, you will not feel as much pain as somebody who is going east. So that's some of the things that we are hoping would be in their favor.
It seems like if you're going west at one point, you're going to come back east at another.
Yeah.
So at one point or another, it's going to be painful.
Yeah, and if you're coming east and you're going back into that subdivision, you're going to still be in the section that is, I would say, almost fully open, and you make your turn and come back in. It's not as painful when you go east from H. But if you're driving just within the west of H, going to the interstate, it kind of moves a little bit, not perfectly free, but not as painful as going east.
Is there any way we can provide the public, or I'm not sure whose department or whose lap this would fall into, but with signage that would direct people if they're trying to, if I'm going eastbound on 15, I want to go to Menards, or if I need to go down into where that Enterprise is, which is, how, if I'm trying to get to this business, how do I get there? And is there any type of signage, is there any, I'm not sure if this is the statewide highway project or if this falls on the county's lap, but just some signage or some way we can tell people, hey, if you're trying to get down to the Great Lakes Church or Enterprise or the dog daycare, and you're coming from the west, you go this way. If you're coming from the east, you go this way. Whatever that roundabout way is, just because, from a safety standpoint, trying to figure out when you're in the middle of a bunch of orange barrels is dangerous, because it's like, and it changes on a daily basis, even for my commute. Like one day I can go into an hours this way, the next day I can't, So just providing the public, I understand the predicament that you guys are in having to close this down to some extent. If we can alleviate just by educating the people, either whether it's through signage, press releases, something with drawings, diagrams, so that we're helping the businesses that are being most affected by this, and just providing a clear way for people to traverse. Because we have, your commuters, I know people go to that dog daycare, that there's a gym down there on a daily basis, and so everyone has their routines. And just so we can communicate with people, how do we funnel in and out of these areas while allowing you guys to do the project on K? Just because you're shutting off a main artery there.
because the westbound ramp, going westbound on 50, that ramp to those businesses is closed. And so the only other way, unless, is it possible to get to there on the eastbound on Highway 50 and go under the bridge? Is that access open?
I think it should be open, yeah.
Okay.
For like Enterprise and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's open now.
So, but once K is closed, that would be the only way to get in and out of there, I'm assuming. So, so if we can communicate that with the people some way, if it's signage with you know, if you're trying to get this business, go this way.
I'll say this. I frequent Hillcrest Restaurant too often. But yeah, I used to just go down 60th.
Yeah.
You're not going down 60th anymore. So I had a call. I said, how do I get in? Are you guys open? And I mean, they had 3 days where water main was broken, so no. But he said, yeah, just go in where you go by the Goodwill. So okay, well, try turning across that, you know. Well, what they did was, if you kept going on Green Bay Road, you cross 50, they do have signage that says to businesses on 60th Avenue, okay. There's a road that goes down there.
Yeah, because there's that road behind
so the there's yeah, yeah, there's a road behind there, which I never knew existed.
It's new, isn't it?
But anyway, so I have seen that, you know, with the 50 project.
Yeah.
Now, I guess tomorrow will be a lot more information, but also a lot more information gathering, too. And so these are types of things that
I don't know. Not being 100% familiar with the project, but you said it's from the UPR tracks out the 94th court, so there's really not that much that's in there. So where's the...
This is Indian Trail.
Yeah.
And this is the one rail line, this is the other rail line, and this is the only access road to all these businesses
right here.
And 50s, this is currently closed down.
Oh, I see.
So basically, like, you know, we can't get in here, so we would drive around Highway K and come back in this way. Now this is gonna be closed. So it sounds like the only way to get to any of these companies is gonna be through this.
Yeah, well, it's closed immediately, will it?
It will be closed immediately.
As soon as construction starts.
Yeah. Right.
Who's the?
Yeah, because you have all the traffic, people going back and forth to school. I mean, that alone is going to be huge look behind the traffic.
Hey, yeah, we
rerouted for a month and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for that information, because that is something that we'll have to look into that, because probably that's the questions we'll be getting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to look into that.
You won't be sleeping tonight, is it?
Yeah, I'm going to look into that. Typically with these projects, if there is a way in and out, we do have a public information team set up that they identify those things, and then there are ways that they put what they call business signs. Just like you said, then they can direct. We'll have to look at that and see if that those are some of the things we can do with this project, and then we can do that.
Yeah, usually communication is the big deal with this stuff. I mean, people just kind of want to know what's going on. So,
yeah.
Have you ever done it where, like, at the open forum, that there's a list of really interested people that want to know what's going on, that it affects them or something like that, that be like, hey, look, these are the... Do you have any sort of, I know this isn't that big of a job, but communication with them, outreach or something like that, to let them know when things change or whatever?
We've done that. We've sent out...
Sometimes people just like to, I don't want to say complain, but just like to voice their opinion just to let you know. And
I'm hoping that that's what they'll be saying tomorrow. But yes, you're very right. We do public outreach. At the beginning of the project, before we even started this construction, we sent out notices. We went and dropped leaf droplets to nearly every home that is possible. You might miss one or two. And we also have it on our website. We also put it on the newspaper, informing them about the project. I had also done presentation to the community. That was in 2018 and 19. And so we've been reaching out, but then again, we need information just like the one about the signage. Those are very good information, because there are times that you look at, you can be looking at the project, but you're missing some of those specific details, and then those are the kind of things that makes all the difference. And then when you go, and we're hoping that when they come, then we sit down, we listen to what they're saying. Any person that we think that we need to follow up with the person. We get the names, numbers, and then we follow up to make sure that we track all of them and get them. We have a PI team that does that, yeah. Okay. And again, sometimes the best time that you get all this, how to really solve this detour issue is when you talk to them, because they'll be telling you things that you were not aware of, and then you try to work it out with the contractor.
Who is the contractor?
Michaels.
I'm not sure if this is related or not. I'm just because I'm new to this. Is that when you do a major detour like this, does that affect at all the timing of the intersection, like the lights at the intersection? Is that all? You guys handle that? Is that something that you guys take into account when you're detouring, like longer turn lights, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, like I'll tell you for right now, 104th is a four-way stop. Mm-hmm. 104th and K, we're going to put in a temporary signal.
They got it substantially up already today.
Okay, yeah. So we'll put a temporary signal, and then one of the requests that we got was they want us to make sure that, because already on 158 they claim that during commute hours it's slow, but we should look at the timing. So we are planning to look at the timing when this construction, so that we accommodate actually the impacts from the construction and what's happening. Because if you go there right now and you do any adjustment, yeah, it might solve it right now, but when the construction detour comes in, then skew the whole thing again.
Well, especially with school let out times.
Correct.
That's like a huge dragging point there.
Yeah. So those are things that we have. So I'm hoping you'll be in a meeting, right, tomorrow?
Well, I have a committee meeting at 6, so depending on what, if I can be there at 4 and get
Start at 4.
Will, then I'll head over, because I got to be down for the county board meeting at 6. But
yeah, because those are fantastic ideas that we need to get and see how we can fix it. Yeah.
Because it's legislative.
Human services.
What is it?
Human services.
Oh, that's right. Human services. Legislative. Next month.
Yes, sir.
How confident are you that the railroad is going to not hold this project up? And so now all of a sudden we might be closed for a longer period of time.
The way I'll respond is this. Anybody who knows me, I'm very optimistic. I don't believe in that it's not going to happen. But all I would say is I'm going to do my best to make it work.
Are they aware that how critical it is that they get this done in a timely fashion, I guess would be the...
I don't think they understand how critical it is. Okay. They just care that they will have to do the job by themselves.
So the one thing I'd add that to provide a little insight into our relationship with UP, if I remember this, there was a point, the DOT is actually supposed to, because this is actually a DOT-led project, even though it's our project, the DOT leads it because it's 80% funded by the DOT. So there was a stage when we weren't seeing any movement between the state railroad negotiating folks and the railroad. So Clement got a hold of the UP guy who happened to be heading into the basement with his family because there was a tornado warning where he was at in downstate Illinois at the time. And the guy took Clement's call. And I said, Clement, the guy's going to his basement with his family. Hang up. Okay, you can get this tomorrow. But the guy stayed on. So my point is he's got access to some folks that I hopefully will help us out when push comes to shove, that we can keep things on track and try.
And if you, again, you know the name of the guy, and then there's some other guys that I know the guy that's on the private side, but he's the head over all of the track construction and their construction projects for the entire United States. So he knows who to call.
Yeah. So just so you know, I really need your number. Just so you know, because
I got it coming.
So it's a 24-hour number.
and the other thing that they stress at the public meeting is just the fact that if you have to do it one lane at a time to maintain traffic, like you said, it'll be a two-season job, and there's just no way that you can, and the cost just goes through the roof.
And the cost increases too.
The key is really those two railroads, because once you take the signals down,
It's game over from a safety standpoint.
Huge. They, on the railroad side, they talk about that all the time. I'm sure you're familiar with Operation Lifesaver, you know, that's a big nationwide push. And as far as the railroad's concerned, if they didn't have any road crossings, that would be the best day of their life. I mean, they're, in fact, that's one of the metrics that they track, is that they, how many railroad crossings can we get closed in a year? That they, there's a big push on their side.
I'm sure.
A lot of it's safety related.
Would they buy us bridges?
Well, grade separations are a big thing. I mean, again, they push for that stuff too, so.
Okay. County Trunk Highway Y and A roundabout. This is an ongoing project. It's still in the design phase, but it's almost getting close to construction. Construction will start next year. It's a roundabout. This intersection was rated the worst intersection in the county. It has the, and because of that, we were awarded what is called a HISIP, HISIP funding. HISIP stands for Highway Safety Improvement Program, and they use it for those locations where they have very high crash rates and things like that. So right now what's happening is the right of way is almost complete, but we're still working on the last parcel. I was just told today that this summer water installation is complete. They're just doing restoration. We'll be having a meeting with We Energy tomorrow. They want a 4-week road closure, which we are trying to prevent. And so we're going to have a meeting with them, and they have a 4-week window to do their work. And then the other utilities are expected to be completing their relocation, the relocation of their facilities by the end of the year. So, and setting the table for us to start construction early next spring. So far, so good. This project is on schedule, and we hope to complete it. And I think it's a 1-year program, so we'll complete it next year.
Is all the right-of-way acquired on that one?
I think just one is left. Yeah. But the good thing is that they are all in favor of it, but they are not signing the document, so it's a little bit confusing. That's something about right of way. Until somebody signs, don't count it as done, because they were all good and happy. We thought we had meetings and they were all so nice. Now signing the paper is taking 3 months. So I don't know. But the good thing is that all of them have signed in an entry permit for the people to work on the property, but they are not signing the. So I don't know. But we are working with them. And hopefully we'll get it resolved as quickly as possible. County Trunk Highway WG Bridge, the demolition, they just completed demolition of one side, the east side of the apartment. They've done the pile driving on the east side. They are now working on the west side of the bridge apartment. They're driving piles, and the project is, well, I think it's on schedule, but sometimes when I look at the way the project is going, it's kind of slow. And the way they do things, I don't know, the way I'll construct it will be different, but they kind of do things in piecemeal, and they are comfortable with it. I just believe in doing things somehow, you know. Again, I can micromanage them. They have
their contractor on that one.
The contractor is from Illinois. Is it Granite? From Illinois. Yeah.
Granite, really? A small bridge they're doing that? Okay.
Oh, it's a big company?
Yeah, they're publicly traded. They're a big company.
Okay.
So Granite bought, they bought Kenny Construction. It's out of Northbrook, Illinois. So then they moved into the area probably 3-4 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
So
I have a feeling that they're trying to get into the Wisconsin market.
They're trying. They did the big flyover interchange out at where 43 ties into I-90 in Beloit there. So they work for Hoffman Construction and do that big.
Oh, they work for Hoffman?
Yeah.
I'm aware of Hoffman. Hoffman did part of I-94.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but again, they're doing it okay, but the way they're doing it, the way they're sequencing the work, there's just something not right about it. And I'm sure
this is a very small project for them, so yeah. They're not paying its due attention. So I wonder how you can get their attention.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just to add to this, there's another bridge on the west of this bridge where it's being constructed. I just remember there was one time, I think when we were constructing this bridge, I'm sure Ray thought that there's another bridge on the west. Ray thought that was the bridge we were supposed to be constructing because it looked worse than what we are constructing. And so that bridge, unfortunately, the way we do the inspection and the way they fill the metrics, the inspection metrics for the FHWA, and then it gives spit out a number, they call the sufficiency rating. So the sufficiency rating for that one was above 50, and so once it's above 50, it's not due for reconstruction. So, but this year, it was re-inspected, and it is below 50. So, it's so timely because once this other bridge is completed, then we'll just do the next one, and then the perception that how can you be constructing that one when this one looks worse? It will go away. Then it'll just so. I just want to give you that heads up, especially those of you who live in that area. So if you see those bridges like that, just know that they'll be constructed soon.
I thought I was fairly fluent in where the county highways were at, but WG is escaping me. So
it's a state line.
Okay.
And if you go down 45,
yep.
These bridges are just east.
Okay. In Bristol.
Yeah.
Over the Dutch Gap there?
Yep.
Yeah.
One
from
the Dutch Gap
yeah,
and the other
go around, you got to go down to CJ if you want to go around.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, when I started walking here, I knew the east end of the county very well. One of the conditions they gave me was every lunchtime I should drive the west. That's how I knew the west. So that's how I every lunchtime I would drive to as many highways as. anyway, U and Q intersection. Again, this is an ongoing project. The construction will be, they'll be resuming construction next week. Utility relocation is still ongoing. There's just one utility left to be relocated, and they'll be completing their work next week. Again, this is also kind of a joint effort between a development and the county. Because it's a county highway, we take charge of making sure that the road is designed and constructed to our standards. But at the same time, this improvement were as a result of the Genco development, which is located on the northwest corner of U and Q. So Genco is very easy to work with. They are just fantastic, and they are following all the rules and design standards. And by the time the project is completed, it's going to be a beautiful project.
And they pay for about a $6 plus million
worth of project.
So they got the electronic sign up, at least going west on Q, that says that U is going to be closed. Mm-hmm. Do they mean that whole intersection will be closed?
No.
Just U is
just north of Q.
Yes, be, okay. Q. So U will be closed. Okay. So.
Correct.
And that's a personal thing because that's the way I go to work. But they had one on the west side coming east, and I didn't see that up this morning. So I don't know if that is that ours or is that theirs that they put up?
No, the electronic ones. The contract. No, it's the contractors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, it is up, you know, saying that it'll be closed next week. So,
yes, you'll be closed.
After the 5th or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
What are the improvements just in general? Are they just widening it? Are they adding a turn lane? What are they doing with these improvements?
Good question. So the whole intersection will be increased. It will be improved and widened. And you have You have 10 lanes, left 10 lanes at the intersection, and the intersection is also going to be signalized.
Oh, they are exactly.
Yes.
And it extends beyond the
about half mile.
Yes.
Yeah, it's significant. Yeah.
So it extends about 2,000 feet going west, about 1,600 feet going north and 1,000 feet going south. And then the east, I'd say about 1,000 feet as well. It's a massive project by the time it's all, everything is said and done.
Are they taking those houses, first two houses out on the south, or on the north?
They've acquired everything except, I think it's the second house from the intersection going east.
Oh, okay.
And they've agreed on price, but the person is not signing. But it's very obvious that he's going to be acquired.
Yeah.
Just so I understand this, so then the county highway and the intersection improvements are all privately funded because of the warehouse that's going in on the northwest corner?
Correct.
Houses. There's like three of them, four of them now. Yeah, on that corner, and on the other corner, they're going to be another couple more. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do they like own the big section there, so it's more than just those two buildings?
They actually.
That's quite the investment just for.
They actually own both sides of the road.
Okay. All right.
And just on the other end, you and QHSA has the exact same scenario now. They started on the east. They reversed. They started on the east side. Now they bought all the stuff on the west side. So they're going to completely fund that intersection.
You can see all the equipment that's lined up there.
At C.
Most of the development companies there to go.
Right. HSA, like you said, Jenko has been. They're out of Chicago, and they have been top shelf to work with. These guys don't bat an eye when there's something that comes in, and not all the developers are that easy to work with.
But now you have something that you can look at and say,
this is the gold standard.
This is the gold standard. Yeah. By the way, you're on Highway C, which is a much more busy road, so it's got to be done even better.
Right.
I don't know about that.
You got those guys figured out.
So the other thing I just want to provide is more of information is that whenever a business or a development is improving an area, they do what they call a traffic impact analysis. TIA, it gives you guidelines, and then the county decides what minimum improvement, because the county does not just decide on data, the county looks into the future. It doesn't make sense for us to construct an intersection today and 3 years down or 5 years down the road, you're expanding it. So the TIA will give you a bottom line, but based on what the TIA says and what the county's vision is in the future, then we will now determine what kind of improvement. Now, the improvement is being done because of the development, so the development has to pay for that. That's what we do all over the place. Yeah.
And we don't want to run it. All we have to do is drive south of the border a little bit to see the abominations that people are trying to catch up on and fix for the past 30 years. So now you're like, we don't want to have similar situations like you have down there.
That's exactly why we did that access management plan.
Yeah.
For that, the consultants that we worked with said they've never worked with a municipality that did this beforehand. It's always after lawsuits and everybody's ticked off at one another. They get dragged in to help straighten it out. So we did. So I think what we set up,
right.
I'm sure it's not perfect, but it should put
my biggest concern with that was with the variances, with any variances to the access plan, because there's always exceptions.
Absolutely. And we built that flexibility into it.
Yeah. You see, it is at the highway commissioner discretion.
I've heard that some of these companies are putting in bike paths. Is this company on you?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. They are putting bike paths
multi-use trail.
That's a multi-use trail, actually. Multi-use trail.
Yeah,
and they're doing it all along you. And then that will connect to C that goes all the way to the east.
Is it just on one side of the road, or is it on both sides of the road?
We typically do just one side.
So probably the west side where all the buildings are?
This one will be the west side, yes. We are not like Madison. Madison just do everything on both sides. We optimize the money.
Yeah.
No, I'll say we optimize taxpayers' money.
The good news is that pretty much now, every developer that comes to us, we don't even ask for it. Their base plans they come with, they have that stuff because they want those features for employee retention and improvement. So they do it, and they do it on their dime. So it's all good.
County Trunk Highway, you and Sue, we virtually talked about it. It's a similar project, but it's on the just on the north side of this one at the intersection of C and U. This project is staged in such a way that it's going to piggyback on this other project that is going on with this project because we cannot close both intersections at the same time. So they are now set and waiting for when we are going to be completing the project on the south side, and then they'll start their project immediately after that. And they are putting all the documents and getting everything set for that to occur.
Just a question, with both of these, there will be no traffic coming through there when they're shut down? Or will there be one way, or how?
There'll be no traffic.
So zero traffic at that time?
Yeah. The good thing about there is that most of the traffic, the way the traffic pattern is there, the traffic that will be impacted mostly will be the traffic that goes to the church. There's a church there. But during the COVID time, they've been doing a lot of online services, and so they very have few events at the church, so they don't go there that much.
Well, Highway C service is right there. Do you have traffic?
Highway
C
is not closed.
No, Highway C is not closed.
Yeah, he's only talking about you.
So,
I'm talking about the intersection of U and C. Yeah.
No, we'll not be closed yet.
No. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they'll be able to use MB.
Yeah. No, the Highway U and C. The Highway U and C project will only occur after U and Q is complete.
Got it.
And only U will be closed, Highway C will remain open.
Correct.
Okay.
And we'll try to minimize the closure of the intersection because we know use it.
It's a major commuter.
Commuter. So we'll close it only when they are walking at the intersection.
Yeah, because if you look at Q right now in front of the buildings, it looks like that's all been ready to go to start. It's not ready to go for payment yet, but you can see that's where they're going to be. That'll probably go in before they make all the other connections, and then they'll move the traffic over there, and then they'll finish the rest. So that should keep traffic on that. Be the same on the other side.
It's so nice when you can read the contractor's mind.
Yeah.
So it's very nice because you can see that it's working this way to do this, to do that.
Right.
So it means the contractor is doing something really good.
And just one last question on this then. We're taking over those are public improvements that the county's going to own.
Correct.
At the end of the job. Mm-hmm. So then we have to essentially get them. What are they designed to? Heavy truck loading standards?
Oh, yes.
Is it going to be concrete or asphalt paving?
No, we do only asphalt.
Okay.
We are not set up to maintain concrete.
Okay.
We can do concrete maintenance, but we're not set up for continuous, long, large concrete.
But I'm just saying the design standard is pretty high for the heavy-duty truck loading and axle loading and stuff like that.
Yeah,
right?
We use federal. So each time we design our county highways, we have to follow the federal standard. Otherwise, if we ever go in for funding and we don't have that standard, then they will not be able to fund it.
I just mean 20 years down the road, I can see if there's a lot of rutting and shoving, then we're going to be responsible for fixing that. So just want to make sure that the base is good and we're watching them and everything else. So
just to let you know that we hired a certified consulting inspector to do the inspection to make sure it meets all the requirements. Yeah.
Yeah, because Q in general going west is in really bad shape, and that was from all the trees overhanging all that.
Yeah.
So I imagine once this project gets done, the county's going to be looking at next section, especially between Q and probably the Z curves there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It'll look good when they paint the lines on this, but 10 years down the road, this one still be looking good is what I might
I don't know what I should say that here, but
I think we should keep moving.
Go.
That's fine.
We need time for Ray's last one. We got Matt to go yet.
Okay, so JB Bridge, the demolition is complete. They're working on the decking. Next week they're planning on laying the rebars, and then that will immediately be followed by concrete pouring. I'll go a little bit fast since we've taken a lot of time. I'll just give very little background information. County Trunk Highway, MB Bridge, just north of Highway K. Construction will start next month by the 15th. Due to DNR regulations, you cannot walk in navigable water at certain time of the year. So the construction will be starting next month. We might have a public information meeting on pre-construction meeting sometime in May. County Trunk Highway, Easy and Russell Road. Again, this is one of those collaborative activities that we have. This is with Lake County. Lake County is constructing a roundabout and they're asking for assistance to acquire right-of-way within Kenosha County, because it's a little bit difficult for another municipality to do right-of-way acquisition across the border. So we are working with them. We have an IG, they've given us a draft IGA, and we are reviewing that, and we'll keep the committee updated as we progress with this collaboration.
It will probably bring that, if not, I don't know that it'll be ready for the May 23rd meeting, but in June it for sure will be ready, that we gotta bring it, because then we'll have to go through full board approval.
And then the Village Prairie is not having an issue with putting a roundabout there? I know it's not in there, but...
No.
This one's gonna be nice.
Yeah, no.
Okay, that's the difference between the other ones in Pleasant Prairie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because they've got
that's on the
two
record.
Right in a row right now. You know,
I
get dizzy driving through Pleasant Prairie.
Yeah, right. And that's why I was wondering
from what I've seen the design, you know, we'll get into roundabouts too much, but when roundabouts are used in the right application,
right.
The one at CNMB is a good example. The one in Racine County at intersection of Highway K and 38 is a good example. I think the ones we've done at H and Bain Station Road and H and C are good applications. Unfortunately, a lot of the DOT got enamored with those things and put them in all over the place, and they're silly and expensive and really left a bad taste in the public mouth. If you put them in the right application, at A and Y, it's going to be an absolute lifesaver, because it's a perfect application where there's a high speed, high volume in one direction, low speed, trying to get across in another direction. The roundabout's going to make all those issues go away. So if you do them in the right place, and I think this is the right place. They did all their traffic studies, and we agree with them. It's really going to improve the safety and the traffic flow at that very busy intersection.
Pleasant Prairie hasn't said one thing about it one way or another.
No, they've not said anything. And so, by the way, I think they're also constructing their own on 47 and also Road.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's fine. It's just I didn't know if we had to, because it's one or two pieces of property we have to acquire, right?
Yes, about
two pieces of property
to acquire. I mean, that's in Pleasant Prairie. You would think they would want to have some sort of...
No, typically they will not. Typically they will not, because it's a county highway. Yeah, but all I would tell you is that Pleasant Prairie loves roundabout.
Yeah.
So.
Taking two pieces of property off the tax rolls for roundabout, okay.
Okay, and then I'll just quickly go over the DOT projects. I mean, I've taken too much time, and I hope you guys enjoyed it, but the County Trunk Highway KR, that project is going on. Most of the construction activities are around the overpass over the railroad. They're building these bridges over the railroad. That's where most of the constructions are going on. And then on State Trunk Highway 50, reconstruction from 18th to 43, most of the construction are focused around the intersection at Highway 50 and 31, and then some of the major work going eastward in that area. They're also working on the bridge over 76, is it 76th Street or Avenue? 77th Avenue, okay. And State Trunk Highway 50 resurfacing project, this is from Highway 12 to O. What they've done is they've milled majority of the inner lane, and they're keeping traffic on the outside lane, and they've started paving from 12, and they're coming east. And hopefully, so far so good, no major issue. And then State Trunk Highway 142, this is a kind of a two-phase project between 45 and, the first phase is between 45 and the interstate. The road is closed now, and the bridge repair, I think the bridge repair will be completed this week, and then they'll start milling and resurfacing. And the game plan is for this phase one to be completed by Memorial Day. After Memorial Day, the 41, 42 will be open from 45 to 94, and then it will be closed from 45 to, I think it's 11. To J. Will be closed. That the western part of it will be closed, and then they're mainly doing milling and overlaying and ditch repair and cover replacements and things like that. And finally, I'm at the end of my report. But if you have more questions, then I'll be able to answer.
I think Ray might have taken up too much time with the front end.
I did. I'm the first to admit it.
Okay, no other questions then for Kevin?
I'll talk to you tomorrow, but at 45 and 142 just to the east, there's a woman there that's, I'm getting a lot of complaints from her because trucks are going around the barricades.
Oh.
Maybe they can do better barricading or better notification.
Our trucks or just trucks in general?
Trucks in general, they're using her driveway as a turnaround, which with this moisture content is being destroyed. So she's really
scared. Yeah, another inch or a half inch coming tonight or tomorrow or something. Okay. Matt?
You're
first time out, so.
First time out, yes. So thank you, Chairman. So typically with the facilities report, all the new information comes out in red text, but I'm going to go through both projects in full since we're all new. So first project we're going to talk about is the KKF heat pump replacement project that's Kenosha County Administration Building. This is a $230,000 project, fourth and supposed to be the final phase of the project to replace the heat pumps on the third floor of the administration building. The majority of the heat pumps are actually up in the mezzanine of this building. We had a pre-bid meeting February 10th. The low bidder was Southport at $497,000. The other bidder on the job was Lee Mechanical. They were around $530,000. So working closely with purchasing, a revised scope of work was submitted to Southport to negotiate changes in the project. The meeting was set for the week of April 4th to discuss those changes. We met with Southport and the project team to kind of unbundle the project, identify work that may have been minimally affected by the current market conditions. This rescoping kind of permitted us to stay within our original project budget and still replace some of the substantial amount of the end equipment specified in the original bid package. A pre-construction meeting was held, 4/25. Submittals are due for review 5/9, which is this week and the beginning of next week. And we have a tentative construction date for September 5th. That's pushed so far out because we have 12-week lead time on the equipment, pushes us into August. This will affect third floor, which is county board, county executive, so then we'll push the date a little bit further in September to kind of get away from those hot months at August. Any questions on that? Okay, thank you. Molinaro fire system device replacement. This is a budgeted $80,000 project to replace obsolete fire devices that currently serve the Molinaro building. Siemens was awarded the work at $72,200. A PO has been issued to start this project. New devices are on order, and a tentative start date for this project was this week. Now the new information. Supply chain issues have affected the start of this project. Fire devices that have been affected. The pull stations from Siemens are, and the XDLC cards, which are actually the modules that attached to the Siemens head end panel that do the loop for the poles, the smokes, all that are on back order. Followed up with project manager again today. There is no word from the factory when those devices are even going to be available. So project start date has been delayed until new devices are received. That's that one. Any questions on that?
Yeah, if it goes out far enough and prices start to come down, is there an opportunity to rebid this, or are we stuck with this?
I don't know on that. Ray had mentioned your expertise on that. I don't think so. These devices, I don't think they're a cost change if we wait. I think,
if everything starts going down in price, then maybe.
So this initial budgetary quote was from Siemens, was given to us about a year and a half ago, and we had them reprice that out at the start of this, and it was about the same. That was before supply chain issues. And
this is one of the few that came in at budget,
right?
And when it quoted it, or bid it, I should say.
Yeah, we were anticipating a project to start, and then supply chain issues, we can't even get it going.
Any other questions?
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Ray?
I'm going to try to keep this brief. So typically at the end of the meeting, I'll give kind of an overall if there's any kind of global stuff going on in DPW. And I should have explained this at the beginning, but basically Department of Public Works has five basic divisions. So it's golf, highways, parks, facilities, planning and development. So this was kind of a warm-up meeting to help get the committee familiar with things, all things that are going on at DPW. Hopefully it was helpful that everybody got a pretty good overview. There's a lot, as you can tell, there's a lot of stuff going on. And we'll be able, over the next few months, to be able to kind of dig into it in more detail. We definitely want to follow up. I'll get you some dates for tours and stuff. I think that will be very beneficial for everybody. Hopefully they will take advantage of it. Not to get too touchy-feely, I would like to provide a little insight into how we've operated. So a lot of what I worked in high-tech manufacturing for 20 years, and so a lot of the stuff that we did there in terms of lean management and total quality management, we've incorporated a lot of that stuff into a government operation, which when I started it was kind of a rare thing. Now there's more folks that are waking up to the value of doing it. So you'll hear people talk when they're always talking about adding value, looking at the root causes, something, all the stuff that goes on in a manufacturing environment works very well in public works. So we've got quality standards we set for projects, we eliminate waste, all that kind of stuff. So you'll hear that kind of stuff repeated in pretty much all of the divisions because that's how we try to operate. From a communication standpoint, we do attempt to quickly and effectively respond to any questions from the public, from any elected folks, whether it's supervisors or other municipalities. If we are going to get hung up because we got to dig into something a bit longer, we'll let you know. But we typically will get back to you, you know, as quickly as we can. Again, I think it's something that sets us apart from some of the municipalities that are out there, because I know when we deal with them when we need cooperation, a lot of times our guys are blown away at how unresponsive some government agencies are. So we try not to operate that way. The behind-the-scenes tour we've talked about, you should be getting something, I think, within the next couple weeks, hopefully, from UW Extension that'll talk about the new supervisor orientation that covers the whole gamut, but it's at a pretty high level. And then I'll throw some dates out probably in mid to late May into June for our tour then for here, and if you guys can let me know what works. I think it worked good if we had, you know, two to no more than three probably at a time, so folks can adequately dig into stuff they want to dig into. But by the same token, it'd be nice if we don't have like six or eight separate tours, so because it is a full day that we're dedicating to it. So we'll get a balance, it'll work out. Last item I wanted to address is my upcoming retirement. So when former county exec Jim Cruiser a year ago told me, he came out here, which he rarely came out here unless it was something odd that was going on. And he said he was gonna be in retiring, he wasn't gonna run again for office. He was really nervous, because I've known Jim for 30 years. And he was worried that I wanted to keep, when I said, Jim, you took a great burden off of me because I was worried you were going to run for another 4 years and I'd feel obligated to work another 4 years. Because I turned 62 this year and I had planned on retiring this year. I've actually now circled a date in July 1st of this year. So I told Sam when I first met with her a couple weeks ago, so she knew right away, and they've already started the recruitment process. And I still think that we've got one of the best teams in DPW in the state from the people that I've met in other municipalities and stuff. I think we do a lot of stuff. We don't get everything right, but I think that everybody operates from a place of being humble and trying to do the right thing. We try to minimize and anticipate something before it happens and address it before it happens. I'm really proud of the whole team. You'll meet the rest of them at the next meeting. We have really high degrees, I think, of professionalism and integrity. I think Chairman Nord is going to leave and speak to that just from the interactions you've had with folks over the years. You've been here, Supervisor O'Day as well. You know, you guys have been here, and hopefully that's what you've experienced from us. I have no reason to doubt it's not going to continue into the future. But I wanted to publicly, this is kind of the public coming out. As I told, like I say, Sam a couple weeks ago, but I wanted to publicly let you guys know that. So I'm going to help out any way I can. I'm a lifelong Kenosha resident. My dad's farm is about 5 minutes from here, and I live out in Wheatland, so I'm not going anywhere. It's been a pleasure to work for the county. I enjoy working in manufacturing, and I probably am going to do some consulting when I'm done in that end of things again, but this has been a real pleasure to, and I think we've got a lot of good things accomplished, so thanks.
Ray, it's been a pleasure. The first time I got to know you, I've always gotten information. I've never asked for anything, I've always gotten it from him. I'm sure had a good time working with you, and I guess I look forward to the next couple of months, but we're only going to have you for two more meetings, so take advantage of contacting Ray if you have any questions about anything. Mm-hmm. He kind of knows where all the skeletons are, where all the bodies are buried. And, you were certainly an asset to the county, and you will be missed. But I'm sure the crew behind you, there's plenty of well-trained and well-placed people that will continue on, but certainly there'll be a hold of them. Thank you.
Thanks.
How long have you been at the county here?
So it's an interesting question. This is actually my fourth tour of duty. So I was here from 82 to 85, left to go into manufacturing. Then from 85 to 89, I was in a Racine manufacturer. From 89 to 91, 92, I came back to the county in like an operations management capacity. Then I left, joined a small company that was 200,000 in sales when we got involved, and when I left 12 years later, we were at 15 million.
Wow.
And that was a fun ride. And then I left to go to an orthopedic surgical tool manufacturer and worked there for 3 years, and that's when Jim then got elected and called me to come help him out in 2008. And so I worked from 2008 to 2013, and then some folks I used to know from Bradshaw Medical called me and wanted me to help them with some projects they had. So I went over there for a few years. I came back in 2014 or 15, and then I've been here since. So it's been an interesting, and it's, folks don't connect public works with manufacturing, but yeah, it's really, there's so much similarities in terms of process and quality and all of the things that work in manufacturing, you can adapt.
You thought about doing ISO here?
So, not in a, let's say, conventional ISO way, but I think that the principles were, what I did at, there was one plant where we had to have ISO certification, yeah, for a bunch of the contracts and stuff we had, but we set up satellite operations that were ISO compliant but didn't go through the expense of the actual certification. And so the short answer to your question, definitely could be done in this environment. It definitely could be done.
Okay. I think like most things, where things break down is where there's poor communication. So I think communication is probably paramount that we're in accountability and responsibility having that.
They're available anytime.
Right. No, I just mean that's usually your customer service, realizing who your customer are with the public and everything else. That's usually where you have problems is when there's poor communication. So.
And in process. I was taught, the first time I went through a process class was in 1985 when I worked at Acme Diecast. And the instructor, he started the whole thing by saying a good process or a bad process will be a good person every time, 100% of the time. And it will.
That's good.
Right? It doesn't matter how good the guy is, if it's a bad process, it's not going to work out. And that's so true in anything.
Yeah. So, that's the thing they counted that would get you back in Bradshaw.
Ray, that's completes your report then?
That's it.
All right. Other matters as may appropriately be brought before the committee. Anybody have anything?
Thanks for your service for using government.
Yep, got to say the same thing.
Last time. Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
Your adventures. And, Ray, we got Ray for a couple months yet before we can tell him goodbye, but a few more months to kick him around.
Yeah, you got a couple more months to kick me around.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, everybody. So moved. Who moved? Tim seconded.
Okay. Aaron Carroll moved.
Okay, we need that for the tape. Okay, Tim all those seconded. In favor?
Aye.
Opposed.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.